Welcome to episode 11 of The Andrew Hansen Show. If you tuned in last week, you heard me chat to Aidan Booth, and this week I was lucky enough to pin down his business partner, Steve Clayton, another highly successful digital entrepreneur, an e-commerce expert, and marketing coach. We heard last week the broad strokes of their e-commerce business and kind of how it works, but I really wanted to dig into some of the details with Steve to try to understand how they could have grown their businesses to seven figures with what I've seen to be really quite uncomplicated e-commerce websites. So I asked Steve some really specific questions about their Facebook ad strategy, like what kinds of targeting do they do to get their clicks so cheaply. I was really interested. I was surprised actually, the core strategy for what kinds of campaigns they set up in the beginning and how they change them to a different style of an ad later. I think you'll find that very interesting. Then I asked him about their product model. So they seem to be able to do these e-commerce stores but avoid the high costs of getting started, like minimum order quantities and annoying things like processing refunds. And he told me a little bit more about how they do that. He also told me about this group of some of their successful e-commerce students, this group of people that are all doing more than $1,000 a day in revenue now. And I couldn't help but snoop a little bit into how those people had grown so quickly. They all grew to $1,000 a day within 12 months. So I wanted to know a little bit more about how they did that, but also now that they're at that level of revenue, how they spend their time in the day, what parts of the business they focus on, because I thought all of us could learn something interesting from that. And it was cool, actually. You might be surprised about what really moves the needle of in a business of that size. I don't think it'll be what you expect. This was a really short episode, but absolutely packed with these little actionable items that you can really use to generate more traffic and sell more of your products. Whether you do dropshipping, sure, but also whether you're an affiliate or sell products of your own, too. I was really happy about it. I'll turn over to Steve now. I think you're going to love this one. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Andrew. Happy to be here.
Big deal that you've made it on today. I know you've got a lot going on at the moment. Travel, moving, chaos.
Yep, it's good chaos, though. It's the good kind of chaos. Beats having nothing to do, I think. So it's all good.
We talked to Aidan just before you guys went to Vegas, I think it was, and you've just gotten back.
Right.
More money than you left with or less?
You know, I have to admit, I did not even gamble once. We were so busy. We had so many things going on. I just was too exhausted. I never pulled a slot machine, never played any poker, did nothing. So I broke even, I guess.
You're a true professional then.
Yeah, exactly right.
We might just jump straight in here. I want to talk a little bit first about your story, because I know you came to entrepreneurship in a little bit of a different kind of a way to a lot of people, where it wasn't really about money for you, the way you found this business. Right. You had this kind of important job, this high paying job, I assume, and something wasn't working for you. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I spent darn near 20 years in corporate America, and, you know, but I do think it was always a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur. I had about the three quarters point in my whole career, I was the chief information officer for a publicly traded company. And it was what we would call a relatively small company. It was a $200 million a year company in revenue. It was big enough, right? But our management team was really small and lean, and we were very entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. So I really got a taste of it for like 6 years, and I was involved in all aspects of the business, even though I was, you know, obviously responsible for all the data processing and information systems. We worked together as a team, and so, you know, we really built that business. And so I got a taste of it then, and then we got bought out by a $5 billion company. You can imagine the culture, you know, the cultural differences, you know.
That's a big shift.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, and so it goes from being, you know, entrepreneurial and lean and all that kind of good stuff, and it goes from that to being, you know, almost like working for the federal government, for crying out loud. So then I had to, you know, I was there for... I had a 3-year contract as part of the, you know, purchasing of our company, And then I ended up staying there for 5 years, and I was just, and certainly I was very, very well compensated. But it was, I was miserable. I mean, I was so, so miserable. I wasn't doing anything that I wanted to do. It was completely not entrepreneurial. And I was desperate to really try something new. And after 5 years of working for that $5 billion company, I was a vice president for this, Fortune 500 company. I just said, there's gotta be something. I need to be happy. It's not enough just to make money. I've got to find a way to have some happiness and have some freedom and, be able to travel and all that kind of good stuff. That's what really drove me. It wasn't, you're right. I mean, it wasn't money. It was really mental health, I think.
Yeah. It must've been hard to have reached such a high kind of point in your career at a certain, quite a high level of success and still kind of feel there was something a bit missing.
Yeah. I think we get sort of lulled into a sense of complacency when you sort of reach your, business goals and you start to make a lot of money and then you have a burn rate that, you're spending money, you're buying bigger houses, you're buying faster cars, you're doing, whatever. And, you're around all these people who are in corporate. And so it's just this sort of self-perpetuating kind of lifestyle, but it's not anywhere near fun.
Those things you described must have made it terribly difficult to leave, I imagine.
It did. It was very, very scary. It was definitely scary. I mean, you think about security and you think about, I had two kids. I still have two kids, but I was supporting two kids and my wife never worked, ever since the kids arrived. And it was quite a weight on your shoulders. You're supporting a whole family and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. You're about to face a new kind of risk that you won't have faced before, even though you've started this business and grown a company. The idea that you would break away from that and go be completely on your own and be totally responsible for what happens to you. That is tough.
It really was. And I'll tell you what made the biggest difference for me, because I was struggling with that quite a bit. And I had a conversation with my father, and my dad is very conservative. He's a mechanical engineer. He is really the antithesis of an entrepreneur. He's very risk averse, so he's the guy who would talk you out of, taking risks like this. Right. Mm-hmm. But I had a conversation with him and I said, Dad, I'm obviously a little concerned about risk. And he said, well, don't just assume what the levels of risk are. He goes, really give that some thought. He goes, which is riskier? Working for some nameless, faceless Fortune 500 company where decisions are made, by people who you don't talk to regularly and who don't really know you and don't care about you, versus, putting your destiny in your own hands and making the decisions yourself and betting on yourself. He said, which is really more risky? And that really stuck with me. I thought that helped me sort of push me over the edge and just do it.
Wow. I've never heard it put in that way. It's kind of one bet against another bet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I know I was going to ask you, because I know a lot of people who listen to the show, they start businesses following my methods or your methods or whatever, and they have jobs of their own, and they ponder this question, should I leave the job to spend more time on the business? Should I keep building it while I work part-time? Like, what's the right time to leave? And there's a whole series of questions, very difficult, around that topic. And I wonder what advice you would have for people in that situation, having gone through a similar move yourself.
I think the minute you start asking yourself, should you leave and should you devote full time and seriously considering it, you probably should have already done it.
Wow.
I mean, that's really what I think, because I think, and it's the same question. It's the same answer I give when people start to ask the question, gee, should I get some help? Should I outsource some stuff? Should I do this? You probably should have already done it a while ago. So
you think the person's been feeling some pain already for a while at that point?
Right. I do. And I think, sort of treating it, going full time on your business and waking up and not worrying about anything except that has a huge impact on the success and the scaling and all that kind of stuff of your company. It's a completely different mindset. And the other thing I realized, and this won't be applicable to everyone, but you know, I didn't even real. I knew I wasn't happy, but I didn't realize how incredibly miserable I was until I quit and didn't have to do it anymore. So, you know, I think everybody would find it rather than sort of finding it more stressful, I think people would find it in the end less stressful.
That really makes sense. I can understand that progression of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on from there. I want to talk a little bit about your business. You're an Aiden's business, both on the e-commerce side and later the coaching that you guys do. So we talked to Aiden a little bit about the e-commerce business that you guys have been running for quite a while now, as I understand. And I wondered if you could give us some more insight on that, because I think there's a lot for people to learn, whether they're doing the e-commerce model themselves or any digital marketing business. So we know that you guys do a lot of Facebook traffic, and we know that you do these kind of low-end physical products by e-commerce. Well, yeah. I suppose what I'm curious about is, within that structure, what are the metrics? What are the things that really make that model tick? Like, what makes that work really well?
Well, I think it's obviously the Facebook traffic is the first thing we have to talk about. I always talk about this as the holy grail of advertising. You can get, you know, a lot of traffic. You can get it very, very cheaply, and you can get it highly targeted. And so when you have all three of those things that you're able to do at the same time, it's like this freaking unicorn, you know. It just doesn't exist anywhere else. And it hasn't existed in the past. You know, it used to be, you know, you could get cheap traffic. Okay, great. But maybe you couldn't get a lot of it, and maybe it wasn't targeted. Or you could get highly targeted traffic, but you probably couldn't get a lot of it, and you probably couldn't get it very cheaply. You know, I mean, so the best you could hope for is to maybe get like two of those three. But when you're able to get three of those three, all of a sudden you have this amazing traffic resource, which honestly, I mean, I think you know this and everybody else knows this. Traffic is like the single biggest weak point of any online business. I mean, it's where most people stumble. Hmm. So if you can get that sorted right away, you are, you know, way more than half the way there. You know what I mean? You're like three quarters of the way there. Right. So that is the biggest thing. The other thing that allows you to do is testing. If you think about like before the internet, you know, in a brick and mortar store, and somebody just had a retail store in your local hometown, like a general store or something like that. You know, imagine what they had to go through to figure out what to buy. They had to just sort of guess, well, yeah, I'm going to buy like 50 of these and hope that somebody wants them, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas in this model, you can test 20 things. You could do that in 10 days.
Without buying the products yet.
Yeah, exactly. Without buying them, without buying any inventory. And, you know, maybe you spend like $2 a product to test it. I mean, that's really in advertising costs. And you can get this immediate feedback. So, you know, you don't have to buy into the inventory. You don't have to put any risk out there. You can just sort of sit back and quickly and easily and cheaply and without risk, understand exactly what is going to sell. And it's a huge, I mean, it's, I don't even know how you can overstate that, you know, the benefits of that. So I think it's those things that are really the big things.
I think a lot of people who haven't done this kind of model before don't quite understand how that works, what you're talking about, where before you've bought any products, you're making ad campaigns. Is that right? You're just making ad campaigns about or to sell products that you think might be profitable, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've got a whole tons of resources to be able to find these products, but you know, you essentially start with a few different product ideas, and then you use, like in our example, you use our tool to just create these very, very simple ads. I mean, believe me, I am the most unartistic guy on the planet, and even I can copy and paste from somebody else's ad, you know?
Right.
So you create these quick ads and you follow our process and use our software to just, you know, run tests, very cheap tests, like $1, $2.
And you have a website at this point, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And these products, and again, and all I can talk about is the way we do it. You know, we've got a command center where you basically can just select these products. You look at them, you push a button, and all of a sudden they're on your website available for sale. I mean, it's literally that simple. Mm-hmm. So you can very, very quickly populate your website, and that's just a complete non-issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you run these test campaigns, and then, wow, okay, now I know these three things are the big winners. I'm going to start scaling up and selling the heck out of these.
Yeah, it's so cool and it's so appealing to people who do kind of more like my model where you can't know very much about the conversion, like when you sell as an affiliate, until you've started driving some traffic and making some sales, but that the traffic takes a long time if you're not doing Facebook. So the idea that you might be able to test so many products so quickly and have the metrics from the beginning to then to expand the winners and cut the losses, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely amazing. To me, it's the best combination. There are all sorts of different business models online, and they all are, at least the ones we're involved in, you know, they all have pluses and minuses. We enjoy all of them. But this is the best combination of, you know, sort of like speed, beginner friendly, no risk. I mean, it really is hard to imagine a sort of a black check mark against it, you know?
Right. So tell me a little bit more about the Facebook traffic, because I know people are curious about this, especially those that have done some Facebook advertising before. So I know there's people, for example, that will hear you say that you spend $2 and you can get enough traffic to be able to test one of these products. There's people who will have, not knowing very well what to do, put up a Facebook ad campaign before and seen $2 chewed through in a few minutes of expensive clicks. That's obviously not what you do. So what might an example, say, targeting look like for this kind of a product? And how might you get those clicks down so cheap?
Yes. I mean, if you think about it for a second, if you think about maybe comparing and contrasting it to AdWords might be helpful to just sort of think about that if people have done that before.
Sure.
You know, if you're targeting, how do I lose weight as a keyword phrase? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're going to be probably paying, you know, $100 a click or something. I don't know, some ridiculous amount, right? It's like one of the most expensive things that you could possibly go after. Mm-hmm. But When you're using Facebook, you come at it from a very, very different angle. You know, you think about a particular weight loss product as an example. Let's take, you know, sort of worst case as far as page traffic goes. And you think about, well, who is using that? Well, geez, it's probably women. It's probably women who are, you know, maybe 30 to 50. Mm-hmm. And you really, I mean, this is just common sense, right? If you just give this just a little bit of thought, you know. It's probably women who like Cooking Light magazine. It's probably women who like Oprah. And I'm making broad generalizations, but that's how you start. You know, and you test these different audiences. So once what Facebook allows you to do is to kind of almost go through the back door, you know, rather than this expensive keyword, pay-per-click sort of model, and you're basically building this kind of in your mind, this is the sort of person I'm after. And so I'm going to target these different interest levels. And that ends up giving you some very, very cheap, but highly targeted traffic within Facebook. And it works really, really effectively. So it's that combined with our, kind of the intellectual property that we have around how to bid first, you know, how to set up your campaigns and how to then scale them. And, you know, when to kill them and when to, you know, there's a whole process that we go through that we've sort of honed over the last few years with lots of different experience. So it's all those things combined that allow us to get that cheap traffic.
I see. So generally speaking, it's about how to just zero in really specifically on an audience, how to build as many criteria as you can to keep whittling it down to something that's just so specific and so targeted to the product that you're advertising that it might only be a small amount of traffic. Is that right? But the conversions are incredible. Well,
yeah. I mean, it actually is always a lot of traffic. I mean, because there's, you know, whatever, there's 2 billion people on Facebook, right? So, I mean, there's no such thing as a small amount of traffic on Facebook, no matter how targeted you get.
Okay.
However, here's the next wonderful thing about Facebook. You know, what you described actually sounds like a lot of work, and it's not. You know, I mean, it's because you really are only going through a couple different iterations. And then the wonderful little secret about Facebook is it actually does the optimization for you from there. So let's say you get this down to women who like Oprah, who are, you know, 30 to 50. Mm-hmm. That is that is an enormous audience, mm-hmm. right? I mean, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Let's say that converts really well. Facebook starts to understand the true, all the demographics and all the targeting that you don't even see about the people that buy your product. They actually, Facebook, because we communicate with Facebook through a very easy method, and we tell them, here are the customers that actually converted to a sale. So we need to know that, you know, for all the metrics we're looking at. And what Facebook does over time is they start to understand who those people are. And then you can actually build out lookalike audiences. And I don't want to get too technical here, mm-hmm. but basically you can say to Facebook, hey, look, I did my job. I spent a couple hours and I got you close. I got women 30 to 50 who liked Oprah and we're making good money here. But you know what? I'm kind of done. Can you just do the rest for me? And Facebook is like, yeah, sure, because I want you to advertise as much as possible, you know? So you say to Facebook, just start to give me people you think are like these people. So at this point, I'm not targeting interests anymore. I already did that. I did it once. And now what I'm doing is just asking Facebook to just, hey, keep giving me people that are like, you know, what you think are these people that buy my stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to worry about it anymore. It's unbelievable the power that Facebook has. And it makes it easier for us and cheaper. So at the end of the day, it's those audiences that make everyone the most money. It's the ones that Facebook creates for us.
Yeah, there really isn't anything like that on other paid or organic kind of traffic platforms, is there?
Not even close. Not even close.
No. Mm. It's really interesting. And I want to make sure people are listening are keeping their minds on how this might apply to them, how this might be a source of generating traffic to their business, whether they're doing e-commerce or not. So
yeah,
on that note, let's dig in more to the e-commerce stuff that you guys do because it's different and new to a lot of my audience. So playing through the business model, let's say you get a great campaign where you get traffic for really cheap and it's converting well on a product.
Right.
What happens when somebody buys one of these products? I don't think people fully understand that.
Yeah, so the beauty of this model is, I mean, it's a traditional dropship model, but it's just so refined, it's just so easy. What happens is the software that we, again, in our case, I can only speak to what we do, sure. But we have a command center where when an order is placed, it automatically goes to the supplier or the manufacturer, and they simply fulfill the order for you. So you buy it only one at a time and only right after someone has bought it from you. Mm-hmm. So it's available for sale on your website. Somebody says, add to cart and buy. And so now you have the money in your PayPal account as an example. The software then allows you to automatically just push a button and then you interface with the manufacturer or the supplier and you say, hey, I want to buy one of these at obviously a reduced price for what I sold it for. And please ship it to Joe Smith. Here's Joe's address. Give me some tracking information. And that's it. So that's the model in a nutshell.
It overcomes another difficulty that people have when they're looking at e-commerce, where it's not like you're thinking about a product and you find a supplier and they say, okay, the minimum order quantity is 1,000 units. You buy 1,000 units from me and then we'll see how we go. How do you get around that?
Yeah,
well, if we can get into that products. In the scope that we have, I know the time's limited.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I mean, all the products that we're talking about are all available to purchase one at a time.
Wow.
So it just works. Yeah, it just works really great. And you know, the other thing people get all freaked out about is, what do I do if somebody wants to return something? That seems to be like, I was always amazed at what people get worried about. So that started happening when we did this last year. And so we just said, you know what? First of all, nobody returns anything. I mean, the percentage of returns is so tiny that it's not even worth discussing. However, if that's a concern, we're going to take it off the table for anybody to worry about. We created a U.S. return center. So it works great. I mean, you can use RMA numbers, for those of you who know that, you know, tracking with your customer and all that kind of stuff. So we get this return center. It just, works fantastically. But again, the volume that compared to the amount of stuff that's been sold, the amount of stuff that ever gets returned is like 0.5% or something. It's crazy.
So, I suppose, especially for low end products, I mean, this is incredibly. Yeah, you don't bother.
No.
Okay, yeah, so I'm definitely starting to understand it better. We heard from Aiden one particular student success story. He's a guy I guess you'll be talking about further, but this guy who grew this incredible e-commerce business, like I think it was $350,000 a month he got up to generating in his first year. And it sounds,
yeah,
the idea that you could start and be anywhere near that point in a year's time, it seems almost unbelievable for a lot of people. So I'm curious about how that kind of a business scales. I think what we've talked about so far is the general principles that it follows and some of the metrics that make it tick. But so let's say you found, for example, one of these products, you found a source of traffic, like a good audience on Facebook that's converting nicely and turning over a profit. How does it go from that to $350,000 a month?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. In fact, we were just in Las Vegas, and one of the things we were doing there is we picked 20 of the top folks who have been doing this for less than a year, and brought them all to Vegas to just pick their brains and make sure we had all the best practices and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And we realized sitting around in this room talking with these 20 folks that it represented 11 different countries, which was just blew us away. All these people doing this model, and all of them were doing more than $1,000 a day in revenue. So that's, you know, which is fantastic. And again, they've been doing it for less than a year, which is, you know, really crazy. And, you know, it really all comes down to, it's really all about Facebook. I mean, that's really where everybody, if you had to pick one secret to the expansion, and where everybody has expanded, it's all about Facebook, because the traffic is there. And every single day, there are more and more people that are joining Facebook. I mean, you know, everybody that has a computer and a credit card is on Facebook. I mean, the total sum audience of people that want to buy stuff, that can buy stuff online in the whole world, are on Facebook. Even my 75-year-old father and mother are on Facebook.
Me too. You know?
I mean, they are. So, I mean, right? So everybody's on Facebook. So the way to scale is simply just to ask Facebook, I would like more of that, please. And that's what you're able to do. And the beauty of it is that it's completely aligned. The reason that this business is so stable, and we've been doing it for years, and I don't see any reason to think that it's going to change, is that it's perfectly aligned with what Facebook wants. Because Facebook wants, first of all, they like physical products, just like every advertising platform. But they also want highly targeted advertising. They would actually like to be the ones that that create the targeting, you know, to the best that they can. They want to do as much advertising as possible. You know, they want to help you do that. So everyone's interests are aligned to scale these businesses and make them bigger and bigger, which is really that's exactly what you want, you know. Yeah. As opposed to Google, like if you take, you know, I started out doing a lot of AdWords advertising and affiliate marketing. And, you know, right away there's an adversarial relationship between your traffic source and affiliate marketers.
Right.
Because Google doesn't want those ads on polluting their search, quote unquote, polluting their search results, because it messes with their business model. But that's not the case with Facebook. So it's different.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So do you think, is it true that people who get to that level, these students that you had in this room, is it true that the majority of your time at that point in this business model is spent testing new ads, is spent inside the Facebook control panel, like looking for new audiences, is increasing ad spends, tweaking campaigns, stuff like that?
You know, it's a mix. I think some people, I think it comes down to what people like. A lot of people are switched to more of an operational role. Okay. So for example, somebody might say, you know, I'm making, you know, whatever it is, $5 an order. If I now move to more of a traditional e-commerce model and I buy in bulk and I use a warehouse in the United States, I might be able to make $8 an order.
I see.
I'm now going to change my focus to be more of a traditional business. I'm going to be more of an like a chief operating officer. I'm going to worry about my supply chain. Mm-hmm. Now, so that's one type of person. Then we have the other type of person who doesn't care about that, doesn't want to get involved in that, just loves this, you know, this model where they don't have to worry about supply chain. And so they are just all about adding new products and testing and, you know, and expanding the Facebook traffic and all that kind of stuff. So, and then of course there's people that are a bit of a mix, but I think that's one of the nice things about this model is that you can sort of go off in a couple different directions. And then what we've seen are people who partner up. Like we've got these couple guys in Ireland who are just killing it. And they partnered up where one of them loves to do all the, you know, the testing and the audience expansion and adding new products. And the other one is a real, you know, operations guy and just wants to be, you know, supply chain and get every last, you know, penny out of the margins and stuff like that. So it's nice. It's really great.
I like that because you're kind of talking about building a business around your own skill set. You're not saying the person has to get in there and do these things that might not come naturally to them, that they might not find very easy. Instead, find what they're good at, what suits them well, and do more of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah, very cool. I'm curious as well, somebody who, just for example, one of the people that you're talking about who's up to $1,000 a day, how many products might they have on their site? I'm sure it varies a lot, but as a general rule, how many might they be selling at that point?
Yeah, it varies dramatically, but it's not as much as you think. It's usually like 10 or less-ish, somewhere around there.
I can imagine that. It's with the volume of traffic, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, yep. Very cool. Very interesting. Okay, let me go a bit of a different direction here. I know, coming back to you personally, you and Aiden both, you're like me in the sense that you have two sides to your business. You've got the e-commerce business of your own, and you have this coaching side of the business where you share these strategies with people. You try to help them grow their businesses, right? I guess I'm just curious, just for my own interest, like, do you like coaching people?
I do, and it's kind of a weird thing for me because, oddly enough, I'm a bit of an introvert. Which people get all confused because I can stand up in front of thousands of people and I enjoy that. And I'm not shy, but I'm an introvert. And, so it's kind of a weird situation for me, you know, and I'm not sure exactly even why I do like it. I think maybe it's because I'm results oriented and, you know, it's nice to be able to help people rather than just talk to people or make them feel a certain way or something, which would be more of an extrovert's attack on something. I can work with people and help people and achieve or see them achieve sort of, you know, measurable results, which just is a huge, you know, turn on, you know, I mean, it's like phenomenal for me. It just never gets old to have an impact on somebody's life, you know, where they're able to do whatever they want to do, achieve their freedoms and their dreams. And I think I probably, gun to my head, I probably like the coaching side of the business more than the actual doing. Maybe. I mean, they're both great and it's nice to be able to bounce back and forth. And it's nice to have this synergy where essentially what we do is everything we do in our business, we also teach, you know, and it works really well and it's nice. But yeah, I'm not sure if I answered the question, but I'm rambling a little bit, you know.
No, you definitely did. And I know what you mean. I feel the same way. There's something about being able to give a person a piece of knowledge or a strategy, then watch it be implemented and see what comes of that. And it surprises you sometimes, right?
Oh, all the time. I mean, you know, there's a few people that, you know, that took our training and did better than we did. You know, I mean, and we love that. It's like, okay, great.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That's awesome. Yeah, it is. It's pretty funny.
Let me ask more about those because, I mean, I love hearing about these kind of stories and it's great for people to have further confirmation of what's possible. So we heard about this guy, he's built up to 350 grand a month. What's another just cool story that you like? Maybe an interesting kind of person who's made a big success of it or something like that.
Was the guy who talked to you about, was that Nikos in Greece?
Is that great guy. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got Nikos in Greece. We got, these guys, who I actually thought, a husband and wife team they were very quiet, you know, and you know, when they were sort of asking for some help and things like that. And I wasn't quite sure that they really had, I don't know what the right word is, like the stick-to-itiveness for it, you know, and as it turns out, I guess, you know, several months later after they started, we found out, you know, that they had done like, you know, I don't know, close to like $750,000 in revenue in just, you know, 4 or 5 months. And they got a bit of a late start as well. And so, I didn't hear from them, you know, like we didn't see them ask for help or we didn't see them on the Facebook group or anything. And then all of a sudden they sort of quietly just like, you know, made this one post where they talked about, well, here's a question I have, cause we're at this rate right now. And I'm like, wait, let's back up here. The last time I talked to you, you know, you were just trying to get your feet wet. And I wasn't sure you were, you know, you're really understanding what was going on and stuff. So I just am always amazed and surprised, you know, at little things like that. You know, you just all of a sudden you stumble across these people who are just killing it and you haven't heard from them for a couple months. So, but that was one great example of just, you know, and we invited them to Vegas as well. So we got a chance to meet them. That was pretty interesting. Very interesting.
That is really cool. I'm curious, it might seem like an obvious question, but is there generally in your experience a correlation between the people who do really well with this and the people who have more versus less time to spend on it?
I don't know. You know, I used to think that, you know, it was people who just, you know, never gave up and people who had an optimistic outlook and, you know, people who shared entrepreneurial traits. But the more I see of people who are successful, and this really did occur to me quite a bit when I was sitting looking around the people in the room in Las Vegas who were from, like I said, from 11 countries, incredibly different levels of education, experience, personality, skill sets. I really struggled in that room to find some sort of common denominator other than people who were willing to try. Mm-hmm. And people who were willing to, at least for a certain period of time, sort of turn themselves over to a process and just say, yeah, I'm going to just kind of do this and see what happens. And that was really all I could come up with, you know, because there was such a diverse group there. And I think, like I said, I think more and more over the years, that's what I see.
That's interesting. When you say turn themselves over to a process, tell me a bit more about what you mean there.
Well, basically what I mean is, you know, and this is something I did hear as a common denominator from people. They basically said, look, we're done second guessing. We're done chasing other shiny objects. We're done getting distracted. We simply just did what you told us to do. You know, we followed the sort of paint by numbers. Here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, here's step four. And we just did it regardless of whether even we, you know, we agreed with everything or we thought it would do this or whatever. We just took it on faith and we just did it. Now, later on, I'm not trying to suggest that nobody has room for improvement because, you know, everyone in that room taught us something. So I'm not trying to suggest that we have every single answer and, you know, and if you end up doing something differently from us, that's bad. I'm just saying in the beginning, when you're learning, and you want to reach a certain, you know, very nice income potential, the one common thing that everyone seemed to have was they simply followed the plan that we laid out and all the step-by-step instructions.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting and something I've thought a lot about too, because I wonder if you're the same, but I'm the kind of person who thinks that generally in almost all areas of life, you're better off being a little bit skeptical than a little bit accepting. Like I'm a person who thinks you should question the things that you hear. You should like dig in when something doesn't seem right, or like you should just generally just be a little bit wary. But I've had the same experience where when you look at the people who've done really well in this very specific scenario of trying to build a business based on a system that somebody's already worked out and somebody's already proven, it kind of,
right.
I've wondered whether it doesn't pay very well to constantly doubt everything that Steve and Aiden tell you, constantly like, oh, is there a better way to do this? Like to actually just dig in and get right. it done. Have you found the same?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I think it's healthy to be skeptical and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, but only up to a point. I think at some point you have to say, okay, I've done my due diligence. I've made my decision. I'm going to invest, you know, my time and energy into this and I'm going to trust in the process. I mean, it's not like you're talking about getting a 4-year degree here. You know, this is something that we can teach, you know, I mean, I mean, you should be able to see incredible results, you know, in the first 6 weeks. I mean, you know, so it's not something you have to wait around for or anything like that. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say, yeah, do your due diligence. But once you make your decision, then just, you know, follow the instructions and do it and put aside all that other stuff for just a short period of time.
Right. And kind of see the results for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really appreciative that you've made the time, especially with where things are at for you at the moment. I know it's very busy. I wonder if I can probably ask you one more question if we have time.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
So I asked the same thing to Aiden at the end of our call, and I'm just always interested. And we've kind of skirted around it a little bit. Maybe, well, we'll see what you think. But I wanted to ask you about the okay. times generally when you've seen people who are trying to start some business online go from quote unquote trying to make it work to actually seeing some sort of breakthrough. What has the yeah. catalyst been there? What's the most common catalyst that you've seen for people who have seen things take off?
So, I mean, we touched on the one thing, which is this whole, you know, following the instructions and just doing kind of the step-by-step process up to a point where, you know, you can kind of take it and run with it yourself. The other thing, I used to actually feel this way pretty strongly, that it was most people who were successful were sort of optimists. You know, I found that as a common trait with entrepreneurs in general. But I'm starting to rethink that because I'm starting to meet a lot more successful people, particularly with this model. And I actually have stumbled across a few pessimists as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's so funny. And yet they're doing just fine as well. So it's really hard. I think it's just a willingness to make a change. You know, maybe that's it. And it doesn't really matter if you're an optimist or a pessimist or, you know, or anything like that. I guess it's all these people. I think about this a lot, which is, so it's a struggle that I don't have a great concrete answer, but I think it's just people that are just, they're ready for a change. They know that they can do something else. They know that they can do something better. They know they can achieve, you know, a certain level of, a different level of freedom, you know, financial, time, geographic freedom, all that kind of stuff. And they just do it, you know, they just make the decision that they're going to make a change. I guess that's probably the best answer I could give.
That's a curious one because I don't think a lot of people think about or and probably are not able to understand the full extent of the change that it will make in their life going from where they're currently at to having this kind of business. It's a big change.
Oh, it's enormous. And, you know, I've been doing this for a long time now, you know, more than 10 years, and I never take it for granted. And I do still even have, it hasn't happened in a few years, but I used to have times when I would wake up and I would wake up like in a cold sweat, like really scared, like, oh my God, do I have to put my suit on and actually go to an office and like work for somebody else? I'm serious. I mean, I was like, you know, so I every day, like when I, like this morning when I just, you know, we just moved to Chicago because we can live anywhere in the world, you know? And so I'm living in downtown Chicago and I'm walking to an office and I'm just like, you know, I'm so thankful. Like I never take it for granted. Never. So
I think you'll appreciate this weird factoid. I'm someone who's never had a job. I never put on a suit to go to work. And now I actually really enjoy putting on a suit. I love getting dressed up. It's such a novelty. It happens about 4 times a year generally,
right.
but it's right. so much fun because it's never been a part of my life.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. I love that too. I just don't want to put on the uniform and go into an office. That's the thing. So, but yeah, I do agree with you on that. I think that's fun too.
Hey, so the new 100K Factory is coming out soon. I'll be talking to people about that. We didn't need to do any sort of plug. I think it was just interesting to talk about your business model and everything, but you're excited about this? You're pumped?
Oh yeah, I really am. I mean, it's, you know, we get all jazzed up to work with people and it's always something new. It's always a lot of fun and interesting people. We always learn stuff ourselves and we always get to help a whole bunch of people. And so, yeah, it's pretty exciting times. It really is.
Heaps of work though. You ready for it?
Yeah. Yeah, we're ready. We're ready.
You've okay. done it before.
Yeah, we have. It's all good.
Hey, Steve, I want to thank you again for coming on and spending this time with us. I think this was really informative, a little bit entertaining, I hope. And I think people will really like it.
Excellent. Well, I was happy to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, not a problem. Hopefully we can do it again at some point in the future. Maybe it'd be even cool to do one kind of a follow-up, another interview with you after 100K finishes later in the year to hear about some more of the students and kind of how things went compared to how you thought.
Absolutely. Be happy to do that.
Cool. Thanks again, Steve.
Thank you.
Talk soon.